You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to episode 160 of the Giant Take podcast. I am Josh and I am joined by my co-host Alex. We are here talking to you a week after our last episode with a special guest in this one, Shane Hollum from the Draft Countdown. We're going to talk to him about, obviously, the NFL draft, and we're excited to do it. But for right now, you got to hear our stupid voices first. And we will talk a little bit, myself and Alex included, about the recent New York Giants news, some more signings that they've made, some prospects and how their pro days have been going. And again, we are excited to do it. So we welcome you in, strap in, put your seatbelts on to this episode of the Giant Take podcast. And I will first send it to my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. Excited to talk some Giants. Obviously, a few signings have been made. Nothing too crazy, but certainly some pieces that have been added and some, you know, media gossip, some John Mara talking, which usually isn't too helpful. In this case, it wasn't either. But yeah, certainly excited to get into it. And let's get into it. Double get into it. Triple get into it.
But what you can't get into is properly putting a pop filter on your microphone. So, you know, as I'm watching you absolutely struggle tightening the strap, I'm going to go and actually be a professional podcaster here. Even though I'm not one, I try my best to be one because I at least know how to put a pop filter on a microphone. Starting out with some signings the Giants have made. Oh my God, I'm watching you not being able to put this on. This is really distracting. This is like pro distraction right now. To give you a play-by-play, Alex has turned off his camera, so I can't even see what he was doing. But what he was doing was trying to screw on the pop filter close to his mic and dramatically failing so much that he's embarrassed so much completely that he has turned off his camera. So let's go to the first Giants signing from a couple days ago. Defensive lineman Justin Ellis has signed with the New York Giants to a one-year deal. He was a former Baltimore Raven, so obviously he has connections there with Giants defensive coordinator Don Wink Martindale. 31 years old, 6'2", 334 pounds defensive lineman. Ellis, again, spent the last three seasons with Martindale in Baltimore, had one career sack in 2017 as a member of the Raiders. He's now he's not a dynamic player, but he is a veteran who knows the system, and then he'll be behind Dexter Lawrence, most likely, and Leonard Williams in the Giants defense, you know, in that order. And Alex's camera is back on at the perfect timing for me to send it to him. Alex, is your pop filter finally on your mic? That's one. And two,
yes.
Can you get into the other signings the Giants have made? Is that possible?
Yes, I can. I'm here. I'm ready to focus. Pop filter on. The P's and the S's are going to sound great. All right. Justin Ellis, certainly an interesting addition here. Like you mentioned, a little bit on the older side, but he played under Don Wink Martindale. He's more of a run stuffer, more of a you know, nose tackle, obviously. But certainly someone who could come in here and fill Austin Johnson's role pretty well. So I'm happy with the signing. Think it was a good move. And we'll see how he does this year for the Giants.
All right. And even though I told you to move on to the next guy on this list, you're not going to do that for me. I guess we're really not starting off great. This is our not just co-host, but our friendship on a daily basis here. The arguments and disagreements on an all-time high level to start off this episode. The Giants also signed wide receiver Richie James to a one-year league minimum contract. Former San Francisco 49er, 5'9", short for a wide receiver, I would say, 185 pounds. And he signed most likely to be a punt and kick returner. That's what he has experience in. I mean, he'll be very low on the Giants depth chart with all the wide receivers that they have on this roster. So, I would be very surprised if he ends up being a wide receiver for this team. I assume him to be a kick returner, punt returner, which, you know, was CJ Board's role. And CJ Board is still on this team. But I don't know. I don't know what his future holds, but I believe that is why James was signed to the team. And now moving on, I guess we could talk about John Mara a little bit. Alex mentioned it in his intro. John Mara spoke to the media, the Giants media, I believe, a couple days ago. And he talked about a few different bullet points that we'll mention here. The first one being Daniel Jones basically solidified that he is the QB of the future, no matter if Tyrod Taylor is the backup quarterback or not. That is the deal. With Daniel Jones, the future for this New York Giants team. If you want to hear our instant reactions to those comments, you could check it out on the Giant Take YouTube channel. And that we have a video reacting to that, a quick one. So, you know, won't take too long to check it out there. Also, the Giants are not, or I believe they're not actively shopping Saquon Barkley. The Joe Shane also on Monday, March 28th said, quote, haven't called one team on Barkley, although he said he was getting some calls on Barkley. He was getting calls, but he wasn't making calls. He's a great player, Shane said, and a good guy to have around the team. So I assume that means that Barkley will be running back one to start the season, although there's a long time until that point. We're approaching April. It's coming fast. It means the draft is coming even faster at the end of the month, and that is why we're here to talk about it. But when it comes to Saquon Barkley, probably running back number one for the Giants.
Yeah. In terms of Daniel Jones is here to stay at least temporarily, and he will be QB1 going into the season. Mara, I mentioned this on the video. It's kind of weird that you're making comments before the draft and kind of signaling what you may want to do in the draft. So not exactly great from John Mara, but then again, we don't really expect much from him. In regards to the offensive line, he spoke and said, our offensive line should be better, God willing, is his quote there.
And that goes along to your point again, Alex, saying, speaking of what you're doing before the draft even happens, I mean, if that doesn't signal we're drafting an offensive lineman, I don't know what does, but who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it is also a little weird that he seems to know quite a bit about what's going on. I get he's the owner, but he once again seems to be a little bit too involved in what's going on in terms of the Giants operation. So that's a bit concerning, but hey, you know, what can you do? Final signing here for today, new signing, and then we'll kind of recap some of the offensive lineman signings. But for a new offensive lineman, guard Max Garcia, formerly of the Cardinals, has signed a one-year deal with the Giants. He started 11 games with the Cardinals last season and had 52 career starts. He actually was an alternate Pro Bowler last year. Which is kind of an interesting fact. So he wasn't actually a Pro Bowler, but an alternate. But certainly solid player who played well for the Cardinals last season. And obviously Will Hernandez, now former Giant, is heading to the Cardinals. So it's kind of a swap of the guards there. Obviously they already have Justin Pugh, former Giants guard as well. So another Giant, a former Giants guard who really didn't work out, going back or going to Arizona. I like Max Garcia. I think he's solid. Don't think necessarily as a starter, a possibility as a starter, and definitely will fight in camp. But I think another great addition in being made here by Joe Shane.
Did you say that was our last signing, Alex? How can he forget about the one and only international running back, Sandro Platzgummer, is returning on another contract with the team? That's exciting stuff. And you're just running over his name like he's a nobody, like he's nothing to this team.
I'm so sorry, Sandro.
He's a pivotal guy. And he's also friends, I believe, with Talking Giants. So, and we're friends with Talking Giants. So I don't know how you can just disrespect Sandro Platzgummer in that way.
I'm sorry, Sandro. I'm really sorry. I forgot.
Is it because he's from Austria?
Won't happen again. No, it won't happen again. It won't happen again. I promise.
Wow. So Alex is just against any football player that's not from the United States. That really is how it goes, huh?
I'm sorry, Sandro.
Let's talk about these offensive line signings in total, like you were saying. So in terms of the offensive line, the Giants have signed this offseason Garcia, Matt Gano, Mark Lewinsky, Jameel Douglas, and John Feliciano. So it's not like they're throwing the problem under the rug, to say the least. They are trying to address it as best as they can with the cap room salary that they're able to provide to sign these guys. Now, heading into the draft, will they still draft a offensive lineman with this first round, these first round picks, 5 or 7? Will they trade for, trade down, whatever, to get another pick? Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But with these signings, I would have to say that probably a couple of them will be starters, such as Feliciano, Glowinski. I can say with confidence, I think Garcia could definitely be a very good backup. And then Gano could also very well back up, if not start, if need be. So it's not like these signings, they might be low in salary, but they're high in their value to this team. I think they could definitely start, for the Giants.
Yeah, and speaking of draft in terms of offensive linemen, Charles Cross had his pro day, and he was said to have an amazing pro day, according to certain, reporters, John, I'm going to say Sokoloff, sport director covering Mississippi State, specifically was giving a lot of information. So shout out to him. But the Giants and the Jets were the teams that he said had spoken the most to him. And Bobby Johnson, Giants offensive line coach, was out there working him out at right tackle at his pro day. So certainly something to look out for. And it's known now that, or at least it's rumored, that the Giants are very much in favor and definitely like Charles Cross. So something to keep an eye out on in the future for, the mocks and as well as the actual draft come late April. Something to take a look at.
Just know, looking at some guys who might be falling down boards, I know Tyler Linderbaum is someone that I've heard and read has been falling down draft boards, along with someone like, Isaiah Spiller, Treylon Burks, you go on the defensive side of things, George Karloftis. These guys are really falling down draft boards. So maybe, Linderbaum, I don't know. He could, I don't know how far he'll fall down the board, but just someone to look forward to on there. Now moving to back to Giant stuff. This goes to Jabril Peppers, the safety, former New York Giant, it looks to be. The Patriots are going to hold a visit for him, or already held one today. Then we're recording this Monday night on March 28th. I don't know. Is he reuniting with Joe Judge? Looks to be that way. Judge really liked him. I assume, with the Giants, probably gave Bill Belichick some little tidbits, some thoughts. And he comes in today to work out with the team. Will he be a future New England Patriot? I would say likely at this point to go into a workout and to have that connection with Joe Judge, who is your former head coach. But that could just be me. He could have been one of the few guys in the locker room that really liked Joe Judge and what he was trying to accomplish with this team. So there's that. And then there's also Giants GM Joe Shane says that James Bradberry is still on the roster after when, a couple weeks ago or last week, I don't remember when, I think it was a couple weeks ago now, Bradberry was, rumored to be traded or cut, more likely traded, because the Giants weren't going to sign him to this bonus due to his contract. They ended up doing nothing. He stays on the roster. No bonus or bonus gained, no trade given or no trade occurring.
Yeah, I think Bradberry could possibly be in line for an extension. So take that into consideration. Look out for it. If not a trade before the draft, I think we'll know what happens before the draft, certainly. Some injury updates here for some injured Giants. Linebackers Blake Martinez and wide receiver Sterling Shepard, hopeful both be back by August. Per Joe Shane, Martinez is slightly ahead of Shepard in rehab. He was obviously injured much earlier in the season. And the Giants are also taking a wait-and-see approach with offensive lineman Nick Gates, per Joe Shane. This is from Jordan Ronan. He said, I heard recently Gates underwent a procedure as he recovers from a leg injury, and there's still hope he's ready for training camp. So that's some injury updates there for some of our former Giants who were here last season, and hopefully we'll be back by training camp.
All right, so that's going to do it for the news. Again, episode's not even close to over yet. You can subscribe, though, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can also subscribe to The Giant Take on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter and TikTok at The Giant Take Pod, Instagram and Facebook, The Giant Take Podcast, Alex on Twitter at anorian23. I'm on Twitter at joshola29. You can go check out the podcast, shipstudios.com/The Giant Take. But don't go anywhere yet. Interview Shane Hallam from Draft Countdown. We're going to talk NFL draft and how it's going to work with the New York Giants, get into some prospects that we like with the draft. Again, coming up in the next few weeks. We're almost there, though. It's getting closer. It's getting exciting. So enjoy the interview. We are back now with a very special guest. He's an NFL draft, fantasy football, and college football analyst, and you can catch him on the Draft Countdown podcast. It is Shane P. Hallam. Shane, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's draft season is upon us, right? Everyone's turned their attention to it. So this is the last month I revel in. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, we've been talking about it. We're getting closer and closer to April, which just basically means closer and closer to the NFL draft at the end of the month. And that's what we're super excited about. So without further ado, I'll send it to my co-host Alex to get us going.
So you had the most recent mock draft. You did a 7-round mock draft recently. So I'm not going to go all the way through the 7 rounds, but I want to kind of go through the first 3 rounds and see what you're thinking for the Giants. So you had Ikem Ekwonu at 5, Sauce Gardner at 7, at 5 and 7 for those two first round picks for the Giants. Do you see any other options possibly at that pick? What made you select those two guys for the Giants?
I think the Giants do have some options. I think for me, seeing Ekwonu there, who some teams have rated as the top offensive tackle on the board. So I think if he's sitting there at 5, it's a tough pass for them. I know they like Charles Cross out of Mississippi State. And so depending on how things fall, maybe they wait and hope they can get him a pick later, or maybe these kind of swap and they try to get Cross at 7. I think Ekwonu just fits some of that mentality of being this brutal, run blocker who can play tackle, who can kick inside to guard, but has really good athletic ability. And that's why he's a top 5 pick in this draft. Something I did not see before this season, but really saw this season, was him be a good blindside protector. I think those offensive tackles are in play. Evan Neal from Alabama, Cross from and Ekwonu. So I think offensive tackle, I feel like one of those spots, 5 or 7, like offensive tackle feels good. I think the other one is open. Sauce Gardner is a pretty common pick there, just because Sauce Gardner, I think, is a top 8 pick in this draft. Like, I feel like he is. And so when you start getting into, okay, what teams are going to take him that have a need, that have that, it's like the Giants kind of fit the bill a little bit with some of the, past failures of first-round picks at corner and Baker and those kind of things. But I think edge rusher is definitely in play. I think if Trevon Walker from Georgia falls, I think he's a very fine possibility. If they like Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon more than it seems like some of these top teams do, I think he's in play there at 5 or 7. You guys can correct me too, but I feel like those three positions, defensive back, offensive tackle, edge, feel pretty good. Maybe Kyle Hamilton out of Notre Dame's an option, but it seems like their moves this offseason probably preclude that. I think they'd rather the corner. That's usually my thought process looking at these two Giants first round picks.
Yeah, and you mentioned the cornerback position for the Giants. There are a few Giants fans around Twitter who are not liking cornerbacks to be on that list. We have James Bradbury, we have Adoree Jackson, and after that, you would probably say Aaron Robinson, the draft pick from last season. The thing is, though, we don't know. We aren't fully certain of James Bradbury's future with the New York Giants if he gets shopped around to other teams, which would then leave that number one cornerback slot kind of open, where you would think Adoree Jackson takes that, but having someone like Gardner come in there and take that spot is a big, big need. And I think Gardner, he has a really great ability. And we actually just recently ranked our top cornerbacks in this NFL draft. So it's funny that you have that there. What do you think of someone like McCreary in the 2nd round, maybe even falling to that 36 spot? Could he fill that void there?
I think it's a possibility. I think if they don't go corner round one, there are a lot of those good kind of slot type corners. You know, Roger McCree at Auburn is interesting to me because you put on Auburn games against SEC competition and he flashes. I mean, this guy looks like a legitimate NFL cornerback, has that athleticism. He can be a little bit tough at the line of scrimmage, but generally they played him off, off the ball with a little bit of deep zone, sometimes in the cover three. So he's running man up with Jameson Williams. He's running man up with some of these SEC receivers and held his own really, really well. A lot of teams threw away from him, just didn't want to deal with him. I think the problem with Roger McCreary comes in with his arms are short and he doesn't quite have that build that you want in an ideal number one corner. So I could see some teams, I think it depends on the scheme. I think some teams are going to say Roger McCreary is going to be a top-notch nickel corner. We've seen nickel corners go high round two. I think he's still in play at that point, but there might be teams say, well, this isn't the guy. So like you said, if they go with Jackson and Bradberry and feel like they want Bradberry to stay and play the boundary for whatever reason, then I think McCreary could be in play. And I think there's a lot of good corners even in round three that have maybe a little more of that press ability if that's what they want to do. For me, I always worry about when you have a team that has a new general manager and new coach, head to coach, what happens with some of those guys that are already on the roster? Like if there's rumors of them shopping James Bradberry, they probably don't think he's a starter, right? You're not going to be shopping him too much if you're like, this is a long-term starter for us. So I think 36 could be a spot if they pass on Sauce Gardner to take someone, whether it be, like you said, a McCreary or a Kyler Gordon from Washington, or maybe, an Andrew Booth falls from Clemson.
Yeah, so in your mock draft at 36, you had Trey McBride from Colorado State. Many see him as the number one tight end in this class. I've seen certain mocks that he's going as early as round two, where you have him here, sometimes late round two, early round three. What do you think about this tight end class? Do you think McBride, I assume he's your number one, and also lots of people are talking about this is a really deep tight end class. This is a class that is not exactly top heavy, but has a lot of depth going into the third, fourth, fifth round and onwards.
I think for me, the tight end class is probably the most difficult to wrap my head around in terms of this draft, because we don't have that first round guy. Do I think Trey McBride could go in the late first? I wouldn't say no. I think there are teams that could like him, but he doesn't have that athletic profile that you typically look for in a first round pick. So that's why I kind of feel like early second is a nice spot for him. And the Giants obviously having a big need at the tight end position with Evan Engram, gone. I honestly think it's a deep tight end class, but with a kind of a big button there. But I don't think a lot of these guys are true number one tight ends. I think when we say it's a deep class, I see a lot of guys that are going to be really good, rock solid number two tight ends on the team. They're going to block, they're going to catch a couple touchdowns, they're going to break some fantasy players' hearts when they steal a touchdown from a running back, those kind of things. But if we look at kind of the requisite athleticism for a George Kittle, for a Travis Kelce, who's that day two tight end that's going to turn into that, there's a couple, but no one that I think both has that ability and flashed enough in college consistency to make you feel like you have a number one tight end. It would not overly surprise me if we look back on this tight end class and say, man, this really stunk. Like this tight end class wasn't good, even if a lot of them stick around the NFL, but no one like shined, right? You usually need a couple guys to kind of come out of the woodwork. So like Isaiah Likely from Coastal Carolina, really good receiver, had a great career. Then he ran a 4.8, and now like you got to run a 4.75 if you want to be a dominant number one tight end. And he's small; it's just not going to happen. So then you're taking swings on McBride or Greg Dulcich from UCLA, who I think both of those guys on film look really good, but also probably don't have that requisite athletic ability to maybe be dominant in those one-on-one battles. And the guys that do, Jelani Woods from Virginia, Charlie Kohler from Iowa State, Daniel Bellinger from San Diego State, weren't used in that way for most of their college career. They weren't big-time receivers. So what do I do? I think that's the problem with this tight end class. It's hard, I think these coaches are going to see some of these players and say, I can fix him, I can turn him into that. Like Trey McBride, so, he is so good in his body control and making contested catches and doing a little bit after the catch. I think there's going to be coaches that say, I can make him a star if he just, you know, learns a little bit more and we can put him in kind of that Jason Witten role, stick route, let him do what he does well. So I think a team will take him early, but I think he's going to be limited. And I think all these tight ends will be limited in the NFL.
I have a follow-up question about the tight end class heading into this NFL draft. When I was looking at rankings in like playoff time, January, February, towards the Super Bowl, I was seeing Jalen Widermeyer as one of like the top guys on these lists. Now, maybe I was looking at the wrong tight end rankings, and maybe you can clarify that for me. But why is it that when I'm looking now, Widermeyer has been dropping further and further into lists? Is there something I'm missing as a fan or as a viewer? Has he been ran worse?
He ran really slow at his pro day, didn't he? I remember that. It was like a 5-something.
5.03. No, it's fair. This is probably one of my biggest misses pre-draft to now. I'm going to have an article coming out on Sunday about Jalen Widermeyer and the curious case that he is. Because I watched him as a freshman coming into Texas A&M to SEC and absolutely dominate Alabama defenders. Like, I mean, this guy looked like a stud. And I preached that all college season. It wasn't as good this year, you know, but I think it's one of my biases. I was like, I saw him be so good at like 18 years old in the SEC. He can't be that bad. And then, you know, people aren't talking about him. He's dropping down lists. And then the workout was one of the worst workouts we've ever had for a tight end. We're talking bottom 10% ever of tight ends. There's been a handful, like we're talking 4 or 5 players with his athletic profile that even got drafted. And that's 6th, 7th rounders. And 90% of them did not, right? And didn't make a team. So it's like, you know, what do you do? I saw this guy play really well. There's some questions about effort and some of the character concerns. There's some character concerns there. Like maybe that's more the issue and maybe someone can fix that. Probably not. So he's gone from my number one tight end for a long time down to number 11. And it sucks. And like, it's like, I screwed up, you know, somehow I didn't understand that he was that slow or I don't know, but something's wrong there.
And so the Giants, I want to go down to your 81st overall pick for the Giants. You had James Cook. Obviously, there's been tons of rumors that the Giants love James Cook. Obviously, lots of Giants scouts, lots of Giants coaches at his pro day. You know, everyone looking at him, apparently, you know, rumors that they're very interested in him.
Obviously, just remember, Alex, today, Ian Rappaport reported that 4 Giants scouts are watching Sam Howell at his pro day, too. One of them was Bobby Johnson, the O-line coach. So who knows how much that makes sense. But
anyway. I think I saw Art Stapleton made a tweet about that saying that, you know, NC State, it's right next door, obviously, to UNC. So they're probably just all waiting for Ike Ekwonu's pro day, which I believe is tomorrow. So we'll see how he does. But yeah, James Cook is someone who I kind of find interesting. He doesn't really pop off to me on tape. You know, obviously he has the good genes with being Dalvin Cook's brother, but what exactly do you see in him to pick him for the Giants? What do you think the Giants see in him in terms of the running back position?
Yeah, and I'll say too, look, North Carolina has a couple offensive linemen worth drafting on day 3. So, you know, you might be able to sneak those in there. But James Cook, I think when you start to see those links, and especially when I get into round 3, round 4, like, you know, if there's a link to a player, it's an easy kind of fit. I do think running back itself probably is more of a focus for the Giants than people want to think. Obviously, they've talked about, you know, if the right offer comes along, go trade Saquon Barkley. It's probably not going to happen, right? But, you know, that line of thinking says, like, Matt Breida is not going to be your answer if that happens or in a year. So getting a guy like James Cook, who I agree with you, doesn't necessarily pop on film, and that's kind of the Georgia way. You know, the Georgia Bulldogs have notoriously just split that running back role so many different ways. They bring 5-star, high 4-star guys in all the time. And, you know, it's why Nick Chubb fell to the 2nd round of the NFL draft, because you just didn't get to see him showcase enough, plus the injuries. I think Cook is one of those players who, is an elite pass catching running back. They started to put him out wide a little bit this season when, you know, without George Pickens, when they had some other receiver injuries, and he basically flashed as a receiver too. So I think in terms of a versatile weapon, you know, you have Kadarius Toney last year. Once again, new regime here, you can get a player that's kind of, you know, I would say harking back to the Bills, like Devin Singletary plus, you know, it's Devin Singletary with actual speed. And I think that could be really intriguing in the long term, and someone in the short term that even with Saquon Barkley can give him a breather, can catch passes out of the backfield, isn't a negative pass blocker, has a lot of those little things. So like I have James Cook further down my rankings because of what you said. I think he's a more of a roll back. He's my RB8, but I do think NFL teams are going to like him a lot more. And, you know, running backs can be a dime a dozen, and they can get a player like that to come in and play that role. And who knows, you know, he has the athletic ability. He has decent enough size. He could be a lead back in the future.
Another player that I really like at the running back position, obviously had a terrible combine, Kyren Williams. He's an interesting one. I think on tape, he seems quicker than what he ran. I believe he ran one in the four late, the high 4.6s or early four, low 4.7s, but what do you think about him? I actually really like him. I thought he stood out on tape to me as kind of a pass catcher out of the backfield, kind of do it all. And he plays faster to me than what he did at the combine.
I think Kyren Williams is not, you know, dead in the water at this point. His pro day was good. Like he had the 6.94 3 cone, which is really good. And shuttle was very good as well at 4.19. And like you say, he has that quickness. He has that short area quickness. That's what those drills are testing. He may not be the player that can run, you know, a 4.4. I think he improved his time in his pro day in the mid 4.5s, but it's Notre Dame. I expect that to happen a little bit. I think on day three, he is definitely worth a pick. I'm releasing player comps on Draft Countdown. I compared him to Deion Lewis, prospect out of Pittsburgh a few years ago. Once again, day three pick who had a lot of success just being smaller and quick. He didn't have to be fast because when you can make guys miss in that short space, which I think Kyren Williams showed time and time again that he could do, you can find a role in the NFL. And I think he's tough enough too that he'll do it. But it's going to be one of those things like what a team say when a guy runs this 4.65, is under 200 pounds. Like, and this is a deep class all around for every position. You know, are you really going to spend a decent premium pick on him? I think when you get into round five, round six, if he's sitting there, I think it'd be a tough pass.
Speaking of the Draft Countdown, the website on the big board, the number one guy, Kayvon Thibodeau. What, like, can you speak a little bit about him and just why he's number one on that list?
I will, because he's not number one on seemingly any NFL team list. So I'll, you know, we still are standing strong there. I just think from day one of his college career, Kayvon Thibodeau was the best player on the field for Oregon. And that explosive first step to get to the passer is just so exceptional. It's one of the best that I've seen. Now, he doesn't compare to, some of the other high-end pass rushers recently, Chase Young, the Bosas. I think because Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't play the run as well as those players, he doesn't set the edge like that. But there are a ton of plays from this year when he was playing a little banged up and was in and out that, just exceptionally gets off the line of scrimmage to the end of the backfield and changes the play. Maybe doesn't get a sack or doesn't get a tackle for loss. That's not on the stat sheet. I think that's what he brings to the table. And the league is built on getting to the quarterback. And I'm not sure that anyone can do it as well as him at this point. So I'm still on it. Maybe he may be false to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever. That's fine. You know, I'll take my chances. I do think he's a little more raw than an elite edge prospect. I don't really have an elite grade on any player in this class, so that makes things a little bit different ultimately, but I still think he's really good and teams should be considering him in the top five.
Yeah, if he falls to 5 or 7, I have no problem with that, so it's all good. Have him keep falling on draft boards, it doesn't matter to me.
yeah, I mean, I think if I was the Giants, if it was me drafting and he's there at 5, I would leap at the opportunity to grab him and grab my offensive tackle at 7. I'd be happy with that.
Speaking of edge rushers, obviously someone who's really risen up boards after the combine, Trayvon Walker. What are your thoughts on him? Do you see him as a top five, top 10 talent, or are you kind of not buying into the hype post combine? I'm not really someone who looks at the combine and is like, wow, he did that at the combine. He's now a top five pick for me. I think Trayvon Walker was, I still liked him before the combine, but I think some of the hype he's getting is a little bit too much. What do you think about that?
I have Walker as my sixth player on the board. And I think not just the combine, but what he put together from the college football playoff through that point, you know, the national championship, he was arguably the best defender on the field for Georgia, which we know are going to have a ton of first, second, third round picks. I mean, he made the difference in that game getting to the passer. I just think he's a lot more raw than Thibodeau or Aiden Hutchinson. I think Trayvon Walker has some problems with his leverage. I think he plays a little bit high. He relies on that athleticism a little bit too much. Doesn't have a ton of moves. Like, he's this kind of lump of clay that if you can mold into what you want, then you can teach some of those teachable skills. He could be top five pass rusher in the NFL. I think that's what teams see. And like I said before, I think NFL coaches think they can fix a player. They think they can make them, you know, you don't become an NFL head coach or offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, D-line coach and think, wow, I'm pretty crappy at this job, right? Like, you know, you don't think that. You're going to go in and say, this guy has all the skills. I can teach him how to have more pass rush moves. I can teach him how to play low, and he's going to be a monster. So that's why he's going to get drafted high, why he's probably in consideration for the number one overall pick, and I think probably going to go in the top three.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I think he's probably going to go top three, top four. I don't think he gets past the Jets, but definitely, you know, he's also versatile. So that's something that is also definitely coveted by a lot of NFL teams. For me, my number one player in this class is Kyle Hamilton. I think he is a stud. I love, you know, watching him at Notre Dame. What do you think about him? Where do you think his ceiling is? Where do you think his floor is? And what kind of speak to the positional value argument that a lot of people are making about why Kyle Hamilton can't go super early. Obviously, safety has not always been one of the most coveted positions, but obviously safety is becoming more and more important in the modern day NFL as QBs like Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes are slinging the ball downfield.
I think that's what makes it tough. Like, if someone has Kyle Hamilton, you have Kyle Hamilton number one. I can't argue with you. I think in terms of as a playmaker, you can make that argument because I think he is really good. And that size and athleticism and speed is off the charts. I think the position of safety is growing in importance, but I also think a lot of teams are recognizing we don't need an elite safety, right? We need someone that can play deep. And if you have a Kyle Hamilton, like, you don't just want to do a two deep shell. Like, that's just wasting his talents and wasting a top five pick. You want someone that can kind of Troy Polamalu, Sean Taylor it, and, you know, play around the line of scrimmage, can back up, can move around the field, use that athleticism, use that size in the run game, you know, do a little bit of everything. And so I think there's certain schemes where they're going to say he's great, but like, we don't need that. We don't need him to have an effective defense. And that's what hurts. I think his ceiling, I mean, I think he could go two. I think in my mock, Adam going two to the Lions. I think it's possible. I think he could fall outside the top 10. I think, I don't think it's out of the question. I would doubt it. I think someone's going to take an elite talent like that, you know, a top end talent like that, maybe just on the edge of being like, you know, one of my higher rated safeties ever. He's just a safety. I think that's what the difference is.
You can go check out all the coverage and draft content on the Draft Countdown website and check out the podcast, the Draft Countdown podcast. You can follow Shane on Twitter at Shane P. Hallam. Thank you so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast.
I'm Bill.
And I'm Jason. And this is the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. So whether you're a brain, a jock, a valley girl, or a Jedi, we've got some 80s classics for you.
Do these movies stand the test of time? Are we discovering something new? Is there an 80s movie we're finally watching for the first time?
Join us each week as we dive into the cinematic nostalgia that inspired and influenced a generation. From the hits to the cult classics, we'll discuss our earliest memories, favorite scenes, fun facts, and our not-so-favorite movie moments, too.
It's the All 80s Movies Podcast, now available on all major streaming platforms. Please subscribe and happy listening.